This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Matt Wolf. Matt's one of our most listened to guests. He's a senior leader at RSM, lives in the valuation and research and thinking space, just a brilliant person. Matt, what are you watching in private equity right now? What's got you? What's on your mind? What issues are you watching?
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for having me. Happy to chat as always. You know, I think one thing that we're really working on and watching is the evolution of ESG reporting. And what does that mean? Not even necessarily for fundraising and investing this year, but, you know, what does it mean in the future? Are we making sure that, you know, our clients and our portfolio companies are positioned to kind of credibly report and record the information that is important or we think will be important to limited partners or other investors in the future? So that's one thing that's really on the top of our mind, in addition to, you know, the other topics we talk about a lot in terms of interest rate environment, labor, et cetera.
And let's talk about this ESG issue for a moment. There are now more and more groups. I interviewed somebody last week whose business is really helping organizations benchmark, are they really ESG or not? Because as you and I know, the whole world has moved towards, you know, it being presenting themselves as ESG, as an ESG firm. And so all you've had this huge marketing effort towards ESG, and there's a lot of this discussion. Is it real or is it Memorex? Is somebody really an ESG fund, or are they just marketing themselves as an ESG fund? And how do you actually judge that and benchmark it and look at it? That's becoming a real issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, there are some groups that are trying to promulgate different standards of reporting and to kind of create sort of a template or standard way to report this information so that investors or other stakeholders can make comparisons across companies. And I think that's an admirable effort, you know, but back to your point is like, is it marketing or is it real? And I think where it gets difficult is not only the lack of any sort of standard reporting, but even deeper than that, you know, what ESG means so many different things to so many different stakeholders, right? If you and I are investors and we're concerned about ESG, we might have very different concerns, right? You might want to invest in businesses that are working to become carbon neutral. I might want to invest in businesses that are, you know, employing or serving underserved communities or whatever. And it's really difficult to create a standardized framework that reports that information in a comparable way.
Yes, and somebody's concept of my son right now is involved in a campaign to try and force Tulane University to divest from investing in fossil fuel companies. And there is this incredibly complicated effort on what somebody's ESG effort is versus somebody else's ESG efforts, you know, and this concept of, yes, but do we need a pathway to electric energy? If we go all electric energy today, would we overwhelm our grids? Are we going to become more energy dependent upon other countries? Is there something past sort of the immediate reaction? We want to be anti-fossil fuel to where are we going and how are we getting there? And it's a fascinating discussion on ESG because you get these ESG movements that take on sort of a spot in the political spectrum that on deeper thought, the truth may be somewhere in between on and trying to decide who's making a decision as what's ESG or not and what are the impacts on it. But it's a fascinating discussion, isn't it? And this growth of ESG investing.
Absolutely. You know, it's like a shiny new car that everyone's really interested in. And then you open up the hood and it's very complex underneath there in a way that few people truly understand or appreciate. You know, the one thing that I'm curious about and kind of watching in this space is, you know, for all the reasons that you just mentioned, how it's very complex to report this, and you know, different people have different views of what's important to them or not regarding ESG, I wonder if it'll just result in just greater transparency, right? Where companies, instead of producing some sort of standardized report like a financial statement that, you know, might speak to a few investors, if they'll just make their data available for people to pore over and do with what they want as they evaluate their investments. I know it sounds crazy, but I feel like we're moving every day towards a more and more data transparent world. And I wonder if that's something we'll see in the future.
I mean, 100%, right? I mean, it's something where, I mean, people are, so what happens is some people have made the claim that they are ESG this or ESG that, that now, of course, pension funds and insurance funds and endowment funds are having to go a different step further to see, are they truly ESG and what does that mean? And I think you're absolutely right. More and more scrutiny of and transparency around what that is. You know, I think it's a fascinating, you know, discussion around what does it really mean to be ESG and what are transparency around it at a time when it becomes the, you know, there was a time where, you know, when many funds didn't invest in healthcare, and then healthcare became such a big part of the economy that most funds of some sort invest in healthcare. There was a time when 3% of funds touted themselves as ESG, and now probably 20% of funds tout themselves somehow as ESG, and many funds lead with that. We're an ESG fund, we're this one or that fund. And then it becomes an issue of, you know, how much is that the focus of your fund versus pure returns and trying to balance those two things? And that becomes the next level issue of, you could be ESG, but if you're not making money for our endowment, our pension funds, we've got troubles. You got to be both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing to consider too, in terms of this adoption of ESG, as you mentioned, yeah, it sort of was something people kind of talked about, and there were write-ups in HBR, you know, years ago, people saying, yeah, it's kind of a neat, cute little thing a few people are doing. And now I think you're right. I think it is around 20% of funds that kind of purport themselves to be ESG in some way. And so it's becoming more real and more accepted on the institutional investor side. And I would say too, there's you know, a retail kind of play or other sort of accredited investor side of that as well, because another trend that we're watching and that we're seeing is just the incredible wealth transfer from baby boomers to primarily millennials, right? Where, you know, one, to generalize a little bit, one generation there, the millennials care a lot more about this than, you know, their parents or grandparents who are gifting them this money did. And so I think that, you know, they'll make decisions about where they put that money based on these factors in ways that previous generations simply did not. So, you know, it definitely is something to pay attention to. More and more funds are, but I do think it is something worth considering for those out there who still think it might be, you know, kind of just a fad.
No, but the point you make that the younger generation is so much more invested in these types of things than the generation before them, I think is, you know, it's hard to argue with that. You know, and obviously it's not 100% the case, but it seems like there is just a much more sensitivity and attentiveness to it. On our next podcast, we'll have our producer, Jay Long, on, who's of that generation. And I bet we'd learn the same thing from her as well. We talked about ESG. We talked about there's new efforts. We just had somebody in our podcast that last week who is fascinating around. They have an effort on benchmarking the ESG, you know, qualities of your own fund and your own company and so forth. And there's just so much more of that. It's interesting to watch this become part of the landscape. We had a podcast yesterday with the CEO of a big health system and Dwayne Reynolds of Just Health Collective. In a similar manner, their whole business is built around health equity and belonging and assessments and trying to make sure the system is actually focused on health equity, not just saying they are. And just fascinating to watch all these efforts become a bigger part of the mainstream compared to the generation ago that sort of didn't understand this or didn't think about it the way they maybe should. But fascinating. Matt, let me take us past ESG. What other trends are you watching currently? Is there any other trends you're watching currently that you want to touch on?
Yeah, I think the other one is really the labor market and what does that mean with respect to data analytics. You know, we have long kind of worked with sponsors and their portfolio companies around how are you leveraging data? Where is there opportunities for advanced analytics to improve your business, augment this, automate that? And, you know, the pushback was always around the economics of it, right? It's like, okay, I understand that this is a valuable investment. Does it make sense given my hold period, given all of our other sort of plans and things we're trying to do with our capital to improve the business? Where does it fall in the priority? Well, now, given the difficulties across many sectors with labor, you know, a lot of leading investors and sponsors and their management teams are looking at data analytics and automation, augmentation in new ways and saying, okay, how do we take the data that we have? How do we take as much of the technology that we already have in place, add a little bit into it in a way that makes sense for us, given our sort of capital priorities, and how do we solve new problems? And so really looking at data analytics as a solution in a new light is something we're also paying a lot of attention to, having a lot more conversations in very different ways with, again, leading sponsors and their management teams about how to, even at, you know, the lower ends of the middle market, how can we better leverage that in new ways, given our new labor constraints?
And let me ask you another question on those lines. Is there the same concept on data analytics? And what about technology? You've got, it seems like you have so many old line businesses or traditional businesses, and there's sort of a new urgency to get better at technology in all ways so you don't get left behind. How much is that part of the growing discussion you're seeing?
Yeah, it is. You know, I think it used to be not so long ago where in most businesses, you know, technology is your technology good enough to collect from your customers and produce a financial statement? Yep. Okay. Excellent. We'll check that box in our due diligence. But it's really becoming much more of a requirement. You know, where are you monitoring your IT environment for cybersecurity vulnerabilities? You know, before that was something that was maybe a nice to have. Now it's something you need to have if you want to get cyber liability coverage. How are we using the information we have about our customers to remain engaged with them, to keep in front of them in a meaningful way? That used to be leading edge. Now it's really table stakes, even for the middle market. So it's not even that much that technology is becoming a competitive advantage for companies, particularly in the middle market. It's really that the bar has been raised for what your technology needs to be able to do. It's so much more than just collecting money and producing a financial statement now.
Right. I mean, it's truly just, aside from cybersecurity, which is really table stakes, it is just constantly getting better in technology just to be able to stay in the game, just to not fall behind. You know, it's a fascinating, fascinating world and how quickly that has exploded. And then trying to figure out as a company, what's the right technology? What are you doing with it? I mean, what a fascinating.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it's such a strategic decision. It's beyond just, well, what are the licensing costs? What's the functionality? I mean, there's a broader strategic decision of what do you want your technology stack to enable you to do, thinking of, you know, not just e-commerce as a way to sell online, but, you know, which existing platforms do I want to be connected into? In a true sort of omni-channel way, what does that mean for the technology that I need to set up and deploy? And of course, you want to do that in a very kind of thoughtful and intentional way so that you're certainly not wasting time or money and that everything is kind of working in synchrony with each other and humming and pointed in the right direction.
Thank you. Matt, always a pleasure to visit with you. I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker Private Equity Business Podcast. Always a pleasure. Fascinating discussion on ESG issues, on technology and data science issues and data analytics issues and what you're seeing. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Becker Private Equity Business Podcast.
Thank you, Scott.